wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking.
Our group is welcome on the first floor of this house. Please don't go upstairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those who are present, please refrain from any unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations, of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step three. And I'll now turn the meeting over to David.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
Hi, David.
Grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. We started this meeting. It's relatively new. We kind of always say this before the meeting. It's a step study from the big book, and we're going to continue to have people at the table who are going to just share experience, strength, and hope out of the book Alcoholics Anonymous on the step. It's not we're not here to worship the book. We're not here to teach you anything about the book or AA history or anything like that. We're really just trying to share experience, strength, and hope on the steps, and in the hope that that's going to be perhaps useful to somebody. So tonight we're going to start on page 60. We typically will read a paragraph or two and then talk a little bit. So we're coming in right at our description. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. And, of course, this gets read at a lot of meetings, it gets read so much I don't even hear it anymore, but this is my favorite moment of silence when they call for a topic. This is my favorite thing to throw out there, is the three pertinent ideas, because it was pointed out to me, and I find it interesting that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in the book is about 100 pages of the book, and we're on page 60, and it was just pointed to me that everything before that, the doctor's opinion, the chapter of the agnostic, the stories in the back are designed to convince me of these two ideas, and the next line after that is being convinced we were at step three. So what was shared with me was that these ABCs are essentially steps one and steps two. And so it mirrors my own experience. I spent a lot of time being convinced of step one. I got here at 22 years of age. By accident, I came to AA. I had checked into a little detox, a 72-hour detox facility. I was really just looking to cool off, dry out a little bit. And that was where you guys found me. You guys told me that if I was an alcoholic, I was bodily and mentally different than my fellows. I rejected that outright. You guys told me that I had a progressive disease, that over any considerable period of time was going to get worse and not better. I rejected that outright. And I spent the next year staying sober all by myself. And didn't drink, didn't have a program of recovery. And it was miserable, absolutely miserable. So I spent the next 6 years bouncing in and out of AA. And I have to be clear when I say that, because when I say bouncing in and out of AA, I don't mean that I came in and got a sponsor and made a commitment to a home group and started working the steps and trying to grab a hold of this thing. I would come in and sit in the back of the room and kind of confirm to myself that I didn't belong here. And then I would leave. But I was hoping against hope that I would hear something that I could use. You know, that's my style. I sort of want to steal recovery. I just want to come in. Maybe I'll hear the thing that's going to make the difference and I can go out there, continue to run my life. You know, this idea that that I'm powerless and that my life is not my own, these were not palatable ideas for me. So basically, that we were alcoholic, could not manage our own lives, that I'm in fact powerless. No human power could have relieved my alcoholism. And I think about all the ways that I tried to do that, and I'll just be brief, but the new gym membership, the new diet, the psychiatrist, the new school, the new girlfriend, the new job, the new city, back to the gym, back to the diet, back to vitamins. I called my sister one time and I said, I figured it out. She said, what? I said, vitamins. She said, you're crazy. And I was in my place in Falls Church, Virginia. I got a blender. I got baby spinach. I got brewer's yeast. I got all kinds of multivitamins and rum going into this blender. I'm going to figure it out, you know? So the most unkind cut of all in the human power department is me. I'm my favorite human power. I'm my go-to guy. If I have a problem, I like to sit down and what do I think about it? Design a little course of action and go back carrying it out. Sometimes I'm successful, which reinforces the idea that I'm in charge and I know what I'm doing. So then this other terrible idea that God could and would if he were sought. I misread that for a long time, misunderstood that as God could and would if I believed in him or if I understood everything there was to understand about him. But it just basically says if I'm willing to look. So it was alcohol that had its way with me, that made me malleable enough to come back after a six-year journey and accept that first part of that first step. You guys are right. Whatever it is I got, I can't solve the problem myself. And I will go with you. I don't know about this God thing, but you guys kind of had assured me you were going to help me with that along the way. So that's me.
Okay. You know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I really could not grasp on to what was being said here. I did know I had a huge amount of emotional reaction to what was going on around me, which was pretty normal. And I was really scared because it was the first time in my life I ever had a plan that I couldn't work out. I always had a, you know, like David was describing, I always had something in the mix that was going to come through and it was going to work, some change of whatever, you know, job, husband, boyfriend, activity of some kind, that was going to make this all work out okay. And if I could just, this is probably this is the obstacle right here. This is the obstacle to recovery. I can absolutely refuse to give up my mind. I have absolute faith in it and I just am not going to give it up. And even though I was dying and I was suicidal and I was couldn't function, I mean, I would come into the room, I would listen to you talk, I would feel I was absolutely had just come completely apart and was in pieces on the floor. That was the feeling. And I would sit there for about half of the last half of the meeting and think about how am I going to put this back together and walk out of here? I don't know how I'm going to do that. And I, you know, I couldn't do it without drinking, that was for sure. So I would gather myself up the best that I could and I would walk out and I would, you know, do it again. So, this is the paradox of alcoholism. As much trouble as my mind caused me, I still didn't want to give it up. It's a, you know, and the vision that I have about it is it's like being in the gutter and somebody reaching their hand out to me and saying, I'll help you. And me saying, no, it's okay. I got this. I'm going to figure it out in a minute. Just give me a couple more minutes. It's kind of like hitting the snooze button. Just let me sleep 10 more minutes and I'm going to be great. I just know it. And that's the obstacle. It's not trying to debate who God is or figure out who God is. You know, we spend a lot of time in AA meetings talking about that, and that's not the problem. The problem is I won't give up. I won't give up my ideas. I won't give up my plan. I won't admit that there has got to be something bigger. And I'm so absolutely, you know, our speaker last week talked about delusion. This is the delusion of alcoholism, that I'm right. That's the delusion. As much evidence as I can gather that proves that that's not correct. So then what am I left with? Well, what am I going to turn my will and my life over to? We're going to get to that, so I'll stop there.
You made me think of a sponsor. I was talking to a sponsor early on, and I remember I used the word, I guess I used the word denial one too many times. And he said, David, I got to tell you something. Denial implies knowledge of the facts. What you participate in is delusion. I was insulted. Sponsors always insult me. Okay, so being convinced. Being convinced we were, we're just continuing on where we left off. Being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we're almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like the actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may be sometimes quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he's more likely to have varied traits. Yeah, so being convinced, there's a lot of little touchstones in here. Being convinced, well, am I convinced? Being convinced of these ABCs? Basically, what that looks like for me is I get that I can't do this thing by myself. That was the most that I could articulate this morning, as well as when I got here. I can't do this thing by myself. I need help. Left to my own devices, I will either drink or I will destroy myself, one or the other. I can lay out what that looks like over and over again in a half a dozen different ways. But my final, or my first real surrender, I don't have a drawer full of white chips, but the second one I think I picked up, I was 6 months abstinent of alcohol, and I was driving around the city of Norfolk looking for buildings to jump off of. I did not want to drink anymore, and I did not want to live anymore. And I thought, well, maybe I'll go back to AA one more time. And suddenly it seemed like maybe there was something there. Maybe if I do what these people did, I will get what they got. So I also love this type of language, just this plain language, just what do we mean by that and what do we do? And the first requirement is we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I have no idea what that means. So in order to put myself in here, I've got to know what he means by that. You know, and he continues to explain that, this self-propulsion, like the actor. It was years before I'd read this. I'd read this over and over and over again, and someone pointed out to me, this is like an actor, somebody who has a bit part in a Broadway production, and they walk in and then they start telling everybody what to do. You know, take over the whole production. You people, you're not singing anymore. You guys get over here. And I think about that in my own life. I want to arrange everything. If I get this degree, if I get this girl, if I get this job, if I get this car, if I get this house, if I get, me. Once I can check those boxes, because I had this prescription of what that looks like, you know, and there's going to be some kids, and there's going to be some money, and there's on and on and on. And once I get those things, I have this illusion that then I'll be happy. Then I will not be restless, irritable, and discontent. Then I will not suffer from alcoholism. I didn't even know that was the problem, but I'm running around basically trying to get what I want under the delusion that if I get what I want, then I'll be okay. So how does that work? Well, you can get a girlfriend, but then they've got things that they want to do. They've got ideas about how things should go. You know, you can get a job to get some money, and then you're working for somebody who's got their own ideas about how to spend your time and the quality of your work. I don't mean to use profanity in an AA meeting. So anyway, that's it. And I love that he points out the that our actor, that David, may sometimes be quite virtuous. God knows I've been quite virtuous. You know, I mean, I've sat on a bar stool telling you about all the things that I've done for you and these people who don't appreciate me. How many people do you imagine are on a bar stool right now failing to be appreciated adequately? I know I was one of them. And I did figure out along the way that when I'm kind, considerate, patient, generous, modest, and self-sacrificing, I tend to get more of the goodies that way. I tend to, you know, get jobs and all the things that I want, my little prescribed list for happiness. And then when I don't get those things, I'm very likely to be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. So now I'm starting to see where I fit in this thing, and I go back to that first line again. David has to be convinced that his life run on his will can hardly be a success. So I'm starting to put myself in this picture. I'm starting to see where I'm in collision, where I'm really just trying to get the goodies for me. I'm not really thinking about you and what I can do for you. Unless that'll get me what I want, then I'll tell you that I'm thinking about you and what I can do for you. So I'm starting to see that this isn't going to work in the long term. Pass.
Okay. So being convinced, we're at step three, and then the next paragraph is, the first requirement is that we be convinced. you know, did we not get it the first time?
I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't either. And I was just thinking while David was talking, I was just sitting in my office today being, you know, trying to arrange the show. So it isn't like it, you know, this is a daily reprieve. And it is about not getting my way. And I've always, you know, and now that I'm sober and I have a plan, and I think my plan is well-intentioned, you know? I think I have good intentions, and gee, it says right here, you can hardly have a success if you're running on self-will. We're almost always in collision with somebody or something or somebody. So self-will and being in collision with something or somebody goes together. That you have to put those two things together. They are not mutually exclusive. They are dependent facts. So that means that I have to agree with this. In all, everything that is stated in the book prior to this point, and especially at this point, I have to be in agreement with it. If I'm not in agreement with what it says, all of what it says, not part of what it says, not maybe part of it today and some next week, then I can't go forward. There's nowhere to go. So I'm either all in agreement or not. And it's taken. And on some days, I have to say I'm not quite all in agreement. But what I know to be true is that being in agreement with the statements that are made here is an everyday thing. It can't be, gee, I'm this sober now, that doesn't apply to me, because that's not true. That's another delusion. So trying to arrange things, get my own way. If I think it's well-intentioned or I think it's going to benefit you, why wouldn't you want my way? You know, I still can't see. I'm still blinded by pride and my own defects of character. Are we at what usually happens? Did we read that?
Yeah, you want to go or you want to recap? You go.
Am I reading it?
We usually, read down to harmony.
Okay. I'm going to go on and read because I want to talk about this next paragraph. What usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he's sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What's his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? It is not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants, and do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? To grips with what's written in this book, in that particular part, is a huge thing to swallow. If I don't get my way, people been telling me that since I could hear. You know, you're a brat. No matter what you get, it's not enough. I have a picture of myself taken when I had my first communion, you know, and I'm in the white dress and the little veil and my hands are like this, and I have a look on my face like I could murder you because somebody had disrupted me and I was pissed. So I always go back and look at that picture when I forget, you know, this is who you are. Here's the picture. And life doesn't treat me right. That's always the conclusion I come to. I don't ever come to the conclusion that I've set the ball in motion or maybe I'm wrong. I just come to the conclusion life doesn't treat me right. That can be the only answer. That's what's happening here. And on the next occasion, I become whatever the occasion demands. The problem with becoming whatever the occasion demands is that it's not sustainable. You know, I can't, and that's how I know I'm lying. I might not know I'm lying at the beginning. But how I catch myself lying is that somewhere along the path, I realize I can't sustain this. I can't keep this up. And then it becomes clear to me that this is the reason you can't keep this up is because it's not truth. It's a lie. And, you know, only if you manage well. And I still get tripped up on manage well. You know, I still have this connection and this commitment to, if I can manage well, it means something. Managing well isn't the point. What we're talking about in the third step is how do I surrender this, my desire to manage well, to something greater than myself? That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about, I came here to get the good life, I came here to get my life in order, I came here to be a productive member of society. Those are all laudable goals, but that's not what we're doing here. That's not why we're here. If it is why we're here, we don't stay here. So I need a solution to what's going on between my ears. And there's only one solution for somebody like me, and that is to swallow what I just read, admit that it's the truth, and this is me they're talking about, and that I do have to accept the solution the way it's written in the book, or not. Thanks.
Yeah, what usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. You know, the gym membership doesn't do it, the vitamin regimen doesn't do it. You know, there's a couple of girls who were lucky enough to cycle through the romantic stages with old Dave, and I keep ending up in the same places over and over again. There's just a different face and a different place. And what do I do with that? I do exactly what it says. It's like the play doesn't suit me. On the next occasion, I exert my will more. I work harder. And isn't that what we're talking about? We're talking about turning our will over to something, our higher power as we understand him. Well, this is what it looks like when my will is in my own possession. My will going out to get what I want. It doesn't even occur to me that this is not a formula for success. I just assume that that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to go out and get these things that I think you guys have and equate to some sort of happiness. The suggestion that I'm a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind, as insulting as that is, I've already kind of laid that out. I'm really just a guy trying to get what he wants. And again, the illusion is I'm going to be satisfied when I get those things. I'm going to be happy. And I love the line where it says, admitting he may be somewhat at fault. I had a guy tell me one time, he said, you know, if an alcoholic is absolutely, completely convinced that they are dead wrong, the most you'll ever get out of them is, you might be right. That's me. And isn't he in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? And the silly little example that I trot out whenever this comes up, but it's a metaphor, really. I mean, it works in a lot of different areas, but I want to go for a motorcycle ride on Saturday, right? That's what I want. And I'm married, I got children, I got responsibilities, things like that. But I suppose what normal people might do with that is show up in front of their spouse and say something like, hey, I was thinking about going for a motorcycle ride on Saturday. What do you think? What I do is I show up in front of my spouse and I say, what would you like to do on Saturday? And she's got a whole list of things. She knows the answer to that question. She's like, well, I was thinking we could do this and that. I was thinking at the zoo and the kids, and I was thinking you could take the older one needs a haircut. And none of those things that she's got in her mind are, I was hoping you would go for a motorcycle ride on Saturday. So the whole time I'm listening, I'm getting madder and madder and madder. And then I pull out my little accounting sheet. I don't know if you guys keep one, but I've got one and she is in deficit. She owes me. I've been going the extra mile all, and I'm getting mad. And then what I bring to that, so now I've asked a perfectly simple question. I've gotten a perfectly sane answer. And now I'm pissed. And then I'll probably react to that and say, well, you're just selfish. That'll come right out of my mouth. I'll just put it right on her. You're just being selfish. She's like, what are you, nuts? It's just answering your question. Well, the fact is I am nuts. So even in my best moments, I am a producer of confusion rather than harmony. And now I can bring that to my work. I can bring that to my coworkers. I can bring that to my friends. Hey, what would you like to do? I found it very useful whenever anybody asks me a question. I always say, why do you ask? You can get some information out of that. Pass.
Yeah, I just want to tell this is very illustrative of this point about the confusion rather than harmony. Before I ever picked up a drink, I was in third grade, and this is what I would do. I didn't like the class that we had after, I don't even know what class it was, but whatever we studied after lunch, I didn't like it. So I would go out into the playground at lunchtime, cause some ruckus that would have to be the discussion and it would have to be mediated in the classroom during this period we were supposed to be studying whatever this thing was that I didn't like. And I would do that repeatedly, repeatedly, repeatedly. And I had everybody's full attention, and I had that teacher's full attention, and I just was third grade, master at it. Hadn't even had a drink yet. But by the time, you know, I had my first drink when I was 13, so I had spent 13 years getting myself all revved up like this. You need a drink by 13 after you've been living like that. You know, you really need a drink. So, and then there's more and more examples of that in my life. You know, you can fill in the blank. Are we going to go to the next one?
So we're going to go to middle of page 62 now. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. So there's a, you know, that's huge. I mean, we're not talking about drinking anymore. We're not talking about marauding through town and wrecking cars and getting locked up. We're talking about our troubles that are basically of our own making. They arise out of me. My troubles arise out of me, and I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, and I usually don't think so. I usually think you are. That's my default position. You know, I've got this thing. I know what I'm doing. You are slack. So, above, and then here's a fine statement of purpose. Above everything. Above everything? We alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. And if I wasn't taking that seriously, he says, we must or it kills us! Exclamation point. And then he has another very simple sentence. God makes that possible. So he tells me what I have to do. Tells me the priority is above everything. I have to be rid of the selfishness. And then he tells me I can't do it. Which is really disappointing to a guy like me. You know? Damn it. You know, and as I roll down that paragraph, I see myself again. I have moral and philosophical convictions galore. He always gives me credit for being a nice guy, well-intentioned. We know your intentions are sparkling, David. You're a good-intentioned fellow. He's a nice fellow. But I can't live up to them, you know? I can't show up all the time when I say I'm going to show up. I can't keep my hands to myself. I can't keep my promises. I can't tell. I would lie if the truth would serve me better. You know, I'm just throwing smoke and mirrors around all the time. Can't get too close, can't see too much. So, we had to have God's help. And for me, I don't know if we're going to get into it tonight. I think we are. But for me, when I got here, I was absolutely a militant atheist. You know, the 6 years that I described, just taking the first part of step one, just being able to say, I can't do this by myself, I need help. You guys appear to be doing okay. I'll go in your direction. Just as soon as that little six-year journey was done and that white chip was in hand, the next thing out of my mouth has been, I don't believe in God. So, there. And you guys were just so awesome because I'm a barroom philosopher. I'm a bit of the Buddha. You know, I see myself as kind of the oracle of the... There's 18 seats in the place and four tops. I know everybody. I know all the players. But so I spent many hours talking about the non-existence of God, and I wasn't quick to give that up. And it kind of pissed me off that none of you guys would argue with me. You know, I'd say I don't believe in God, and people in AA would say, "That's cool. You don't have to come this way. Why don't you get a coffee commitment? Why don't you help me set up these chairs? That's cool. Come this way." Of course, the very first person that I broached that with, they said, "Don't worry about it. You can make the doorknob your higher power." And I was sitting there shaking and incoherent and sick in a detox when I heard about the doorknob. And I remember thinking, that's insane. I just came from a crack house, but that's nuts. Okay, we're going to get into it in the next paragraph. I'll pass.
Okay, so this is interesting. It says, we must be rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. That's like, this. Here's the vice grip, you know? God makes that possible. Really? That's what I got to do. And there's no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. So entirely getting rid of self. So that says to me, so you mean it's possible I can entirely get rid of myself? Why would I want to do that? I can't. It's the same thing I was just talking about with the letting go of my mind. I don't want to let go of anything. Not my mind, not myself, not surrender my life. It's not an interesting prospect. And I don't even, while I'm debating it, what I don't realize is I couldn't do it if I really even said I wanted to. Because I have no idea how to do it. I've been so steeped in thinking about myself my whole life. I can't think about you. I just don't know how to do that. And when I was sober longer than I care to think about, 6 years, and my life was coming apart, I called my sponsor and I said I was in a job that I thought was beneath me. Now just remember that I hadn't worked in about 6 years and had no self-discipline. My life was coming apart. My husband was leaving, and I said, I'm better than this. She said, you're better than this? Really? You're in that place by yourself most of the time, all day, right? Yeah. She said, and you can't get along with yourself. You're it's completely spun out and not okay, and you're alone. What if we put you in a place where there's people? It's not going to be good, Judy. I'm telling you. Because you can't surrender. And then she said to me, you have a daughter, and you need to stop thinking about yourself for 5 minutes and think about that kid because it's Christmas. So I don't want any more phone calls about how bad you feel and how awful this is and what's going on. You have a child, and she lives in the house with you. Pay attention. And as David described, I said, that was mean. I don't like that. I appreciate it. And the sad thing about that, you know, I can laugh about it, but the sad thing about it was I really didn't know how to pay attention to my daughter. I had that, you know, she was 9, I guess, at that point, and I had to have people in AA tell me how to do that. They had to tell me how to sit down with her and how to pay attention to her and how to play with the toys with her. I didn't know how to do that. Not because I'm stupid, but because I was like an empty shell. And empty people don't know how to do anything but play games. You play a role. You know, I was always doing that in bars. I'd just make up some story about who I was, and I'd go tell you. And we'd have grand conversation about it. And this is back to what I was saying about being sustainable. You can sustain that in a night, you know. You can talk about it. You can have the whole fantasy goes on, and they believe you, and you get drunk, and you have a grand time, and you walk away, and you never see them again, and it's over until the next time, and you go make up some other story. And this is the way I can remember being a kid in high school and getting up in the morning and looking in the mirror and say, well, who are we going to be today? Because I always had to have a game plan about who I was before I walked out of the door. And I hadn't been drinking that long. So something's wrong with me. Something that needs some serious attention and some serious power. Because that's who I am. Left to my own devices. Okay.
Yeah, if you called any one of my friends before we went out, I'd call them up and say, what are you doing? He's like, I'm putting on a personality. That was as we were warming up, drinking at home before you go out, putting on a person. I remember there was something a couple of things that you said that sparked me. Like, I remember, you know, these blackouts, you know, when you're coming to the next day and you're kind of remembering, I would get like Polaroid picture images, you know, of just like being in a place or someone's face or some sort of reaction that, you know, wasn't pleasant. Maybe a little video snippet in there. And I remember just like, in my mind's eye, I can see myself coming to at Speedy Gonzalez Tacos in front of this guy. And he's looking at me and he said, you don't play bass at all, do you, David? And I looked around as if he was talking to somebody else. I'm like, no, I don't. But apparently I'd been talking to him about my musicianship for the last half hour. And the thing that you said too, where it's like I become whatever the situation demands, and that chameleon thing, that like whatever I need to do to appear competent, and the real flaw in that is it's not what the situation demands, it's what I think the situation demands. So it goes through the filter of my crazy mind. So you ask me a simple question, I got to put it through this filter up here. Why does he want to know? What's the thing that he wants to hear? What's going to benefit me? How should I phrase it? What little amount of information can I give to get what I want here? Instead of just saying, yeah, I think it might rain. I sleep good at night. I'm tired at the end of the day with all that work you got to do in simple situations. So where do we find ourselves here? This is the how and why of it? Mm-hmm. The the bottom of 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work, period. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, we're back to the actor analogy, God was going to be the director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if, it's a conditional statement, if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt the new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. So the thing that what I was describing, being the militant atheist, you guys brought me along very gently in that, and it was a sponsor who said, well, David, could you stop saying no and start saying maybe? And I had to look at my life. I had to look at my track record. I had to look at just that simple question, and I thought, yeah, I'm open. Sort of, not really, but that's what seems to be demanded here. And the guy that really saved my life just basically said, look, whenever you see the word God, hear the word God, read the word God, I want you to substitute. And this is my experience, this is what happened to me, that's all I can describe. I'm not trying to tell anybody anything else. When you see the word God, hear the word God, read the word God, I want you to substitute the actions of alcohol, the actions of AA. And do you know what the actions of AA are, David? And I said, yes. But he knew who he was talking to. He said, but I'm going to describe them to you. number one, you're going to work the steps with a sponsor. Number two, you're going to get a home group. Make a commitment to a meeting and show up. You're going to say some simple prayers. I want you to talk to 3 alcoholics every day. We're going to read this big book. Are you willing to do those things? Yeah, I'm willing to do those things. Okay. And I came to believe that the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous would restore me to sanity, and I was willing to turn my life over to the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we go back to this paragraph, and when I'm substituting, when I'm reading, first of all, we had to quit playing God, and we've already described that pretty well, where I think I know what's best, and you go here, and you go there, and when I get this, and this is right, and this is wrong, and you're good, and you're not so good, and I just have to stop doing that. It didn't work. And I made a decision that hereafter in this drama of life, that the actions of AA are gonna run David's life. That's gonna be the centerpiece. So the actions of AA are the principles. I am their agent. The actions of AA are the father, and I am his child. This is a simple idea. And this concept is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch. When I sincerely took that position, when I sincerely started showing up at meetings 20 minutes early, looking to help, looking for people to talk to, maybe there's a newcomer, maybe there's a chair that needs to be set up. After we said the Lord's Prayer, I looked for somebody who might need a kind word or word of encouragement. Hey man, can I help you clean up this room? I don't have to dash off because I'm such a big deal. I want to make sure that AA is secure. That this meeting is secure. If there's an opportunity to help, I will help. When I start doing the steps with a sponsor and start marching through this inventory and these amends, and then I did feel that new power flow in. Suddenly, I remember asking my sponsor in all sincerity, how long do I have to go to meetings? He said, you have to go until you want to go. I was like, damn it, what does that mean? Give me something like that. But I felt that power flow in. I started looking forward to going to AA meetings. I started looking forward to seeing you guys. I started being filled with a little bit of joy when you rang my phone, or picked up my phone. Oh gosh, I'm glad to hear from you, David. I want to tell you and it gave me a power. And I felt it, flow in. My life began to change. I did become less interested in my plans and designs. And as Judy well points out, I seem to have a daily reprieve from that. Today was a pretty good day, plans and designs wise. But we'll see what happens tomorrow. I might just wake up in the morning and just decide, I got the show again. Here I go. So the sponsor that I work with today has made it real clear to me that this practice is not a one and done kind of a thing. You know, my first sponsor had me write down the prayer where they were about to read on a piece of paper. He said, just fold it up in your pocket and pull it out as many times during the day as you can possibly read it. And so I would just do it. And I came to rely on it. I came to look for it. Take a big, deep breath and read this prayer. So, and these things started to happen. And it's just always been the case with me that I'm always looking to feel better, believe me. I mean, that's like my primary motive. I want to feel better. And I always just thought, if I got these things, then I would feel better. And what you guys were trying to tell me is if I would do these things, that I might feel better, you know? And so I started doing those things, and sure enough, I did feel better. And then that becomes I want more, of course. So, yeah, that's it.
Okay, so the actions of AA. Very interesting. So I wasn't interested in that at all. If we kept close to him and performed his work well, become conscious of his presence, we can contribute to life. And it's very interesting to me that the last sentence is, we begin to lose our fear, because isn't that the problem? I'm afraid. That's why I can't talk to you. That's why I don't want to be involved with you. That's why I don't want to get up in the morning. I'm terrified, and I had no idea that I was terrified. I never knew that. I never knew when I was in third grade, causing all that commotion in that classroom, that I was afraid. That's why I was doing that. And that later on, we're going to talk about fear and the evil and corroding threat, and it really, really is. But right now, we're talking about taking these actions and what happens to me when I'm with you. And so now I'm going to tell you what happens to me when I'm with you. It's an amazing thing that happens to me when I'm with you. I'm not that person I just described, that quick, crazy, psycho person who can't think about you. And I have to be around you in order to be who God intended me to be. I cannot be who God intended me to be if I'm not with you. I have proved that to myself. Did it need to be proved? Absolutely not, because people told me, you know, when they tell you to come to the AA meetings and make the phone calls and do all the things David just described, we're not telling you that because we decided, let's give this guy something to do. Let's make stuff up. Let's just make stuff up. That's not what's going on. What they knew, and I would never give anybody credit for until after I proved them right, was that if I would do the actions, which includes being with you, you know, God and another person is involved in just about all of the steps. And if I will do that, something will happen to me. And something happens to me every time I'm with you. I change. I can feel it happening to me. It's happening to me right now while I'm talking. It's like all my insides just go. And I had a very tough, stressful day today, mostly because I was there. It could just get me to stay home. I don't know. And as soon as I get back where I belong, which is here, my insides go back in place, my mind settles down, and I'm like a different person. When I don't come here and be with you, it's like a suicide mission for me. I really can't not be here. And I've been sober a long time. And I kept thinking along the way that, I was going to be able to contribute to life and have peace of mind if I managed this well, if I managed the steps well. And my first 6 years of my sobriety were about managing the steps to produce the effect I wanted, not to produce the effect God intended. Very important distinction that I had to learn in those 6 years. And that I'm not here to be of service to me and my plan, that my sponsor used to say to me a lot, you know, God saved you from an alcoholic death. And he intends for, he has an intention and a plan for your life. And you need to show up for it. That's all you need to do. Just show up for it. And if you're not willing to show up for it, surrendered, then you get what you get. And, you know, and that, when somebody says that to you, it's a little daunting. You know, I felt, again, like my head was in a vice grip when she said that to me, because what it means is you have got to stop and let go. You have got to stop what you're doing because it's killing you. And then she said to me one time when I was, my life was coming apart, she said to me, you do realize that you can die of alcoholism and never take one drink, because the alcoholism is here. It's not in the bottle. The bottle is what gets me in the door. This is what I got to deal with when I'm here. So I am obligated that if I want what this says, if I want the fear to go, and I want a consciousness of something other than myself, I'll just say that. It doesn't have to be of God. Do you just not want what you've had? I have to ask myself that. Do I want to be free of this? I have been so tortured by my mind before I drank, as a drinking alcoholic, tortured. The only thing that would make it stop was just oblivion. And then that stopped working. You know, then I'd wake up too quick, too soon, and I'd have to start over again. And it just is, it's unsustainable. Why? Because it's a lie. It's a lie that you can live like this. So I'll stop there.
So we're in the middle of 63. We were now at step 3. Mm-hmm. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy love, thy power, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we are ready and could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. So as we go through this, you know, the thing that the sponsor helped me with was that it says, David, it says as we understand him, not when we understand him, not if we understand him, not how we understand him, just as we understand him. And as the years have gone, I've taken this step. I have turned my will and my life over to the power of love. I have turned my will and my life over to the power of goodness in the world. I've turned my will and my life over to the actions of AA. I now have a belief in some sort of God. The extent of my knowledge of that is that there is one, and I'm not it. You know, and I'm not interested in trying to define it any further. But I do feel a connection when I'm praying, and I do pray to God today. And it's an interesting phrase, to build with me and do with me as you will, your will. I'm offering myself as I'm your lump of clay. You know. I think of that as like sometimes in the morning, I'm just reporting for duty. Your servant, sir. What would you have me do today? I always like the line, relieve me of the bondage of self. I thought that said, relieve me of the bondage of self, because it sucks and it's uncomfortable and I'd like to feel better. But it doesn't say that. It says to relieve me of the bondage of self so that I can really kind of do what you want me to do. Take away my difficulties so that I feel better. No. Take away my difficulties so that victory over them may bear witness. And it was pointed out to me that's just to be an example, to be able to tell an experience of those I might help, of your power and your love and your way of life. May I do your will always. And I don't know that I can claim an utter abandon. You know, I have been driven to my knees at many points before I got sober and in sobriety with tears streaming down my face, saying, God, help me, God, take this, it's yours. I'm really good at creating a huge mountain of steamy, smelly mess and saying, God, you can have it now, I'm done with it. I've worked all my miracles on it. You know, but it points me in that direction. Like, how about we don't concern ourselves with what you want today, David, and why don't you go about doing whatever the Father puts in front of you, just for today. And it, for me, it's that simple.
And sometimes it doesn't look so good, you know? It doesn't look pretty. It doesn't look fun. It just doesn't look good. And I'm not into that. I'm into something that's attractive, you know, the brass and the glass. I used to, when I was growing up into my alcoholism in D.C., where I did most of my drinking, you know, I was really into the brass and the glass, these high-class places that we'd go drink, and just loved all that. Of course, I wasn't so high-class when I walked out of it. Well, I wasn't walking out too often, but I want to say this about will and life, and this is something that, you know, I really actually learned from Joe and Charlie in those big book studies. And I'll never forget it when they said it. They said, your will is your thoughts and your life is your actions. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, that really just put it into, made it so succinct. And the other thing about the third step prayer is that it's the one and done, you know, thing. The third step, this is a continuous, ongoing process. That prayer doesn't say a thing about me, really. It talks about God, a power greater than myself, His will. The only thing it says, take away my difficulties, victory over them, may bear witness to those I would help. So again, even though it's my difficulties, it's to the extent that removing them are going to have some good purpose for somebody else, not for me. Mm-hmm. That's the point of the prayer. It's not for me. This is where we begin to get acquainted with this idea that your life's none of your business and you're really not here for you. Bad news. This is bad news. And then the last thing I'll say about this is God wants volunteers, not slaves. So I can volunteer for this or not, but God does not enforce anything. And the way my sponsor used to describe it to me is she'd say, well, you know, I'd be tied up with my pile of crap. And she'd say, well, God's standing in the corner with his arms folded saying, whenever you're ready, whenever you're ready. So whenever you're ready, she'd say, call me back when you're ready. She'd hang the phone up. I hate these people. Always have told me the truth. I've been blessed by people who have always told me the truth. Okay.
That's us.
All right. I'm going to pass the basket. And we are self-supporting through our own contributions. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Contributions cover each group's rent and expenses. The seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of the contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Do we have any announcements tonight?
Yeah, I've got an announcement. I'm Graham, an alcoholic.
Hey, Graham.
I've got some great news. Starting next week, the meeting is not going to be in this room. It's going to be in a much bigger room in the main church there, the place where we had the speaker meeting last week. So if you don't know where it is, that's fine. There'll be a home group member to direct you, but it's basically right across the parking lot in there and on the left. It starts at the same time, just moving down the road a little bit, and nobody will have to sit on the stairs.
Okay.
Thanks, Graham.
Anything else? Anybody else? Hey, Holly.
Principal's group in Chesapeake, my home group, is having their fourth anniversary next Tuesday night. Potluck dinner, it starts at 6:30.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody else have an announcement?
Out there.
Hello, everybody.
One of the kids on the stairs.
Crystal Carroll, and I am
Hi, Crystal.
My home group, the Big Book Topic Group, we're celebrating our 11th anniversary on February 2nd, which is also Groundhog's Day. So be prepared for a repetitive day. It is a bruncheon style meal and a workshop panel of speakers, and we would love it if you would come and join us. That is in Hampton at 514 South Armistead Avenue. It is from 10 to 1 on February 2nd. If you need any more information, see me after the meeting. Thanks.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Ailish. I'm an alcoholic.
Ailish.
Yes, big thank you again. Thank you. Dinner and meeting. I mean, 5:30 next Monday at Christ in St. Luke's.
Next Tuesday.
Tuesday. A week from tomorrow. Is there anything else I need to mention?
5:30 potluck, 6 p.m. speakers Joe C. and Laura H. at Christ in St. Luke's Church, Tuesday, January 29th. There are flyers on the coffee table.
Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Our literature, there is literature available. See one of us if you're interested in that. And do we have anybody who's new to Alcoholics Anonymous, your first meeting, or you're just in your first 30 days, you'd like to introduce yourself to us so we get to know you? Anybody? Okay. Sponsorship is...
Right here.
Oh, we got somebody.
I'm Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kevin.
Kevin. Welcome.
Sponsorship is in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. All right. Please see one of these folks if you need a sponsor. Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, we're invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Bella Pizza. And David is going to read the last two paragraphs on 164.
Mm-hmm. All right, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Okay, if there's nothing else, we'll close with the words.
Amen. Amen.
Hey, you know, a little one of these on the end, I think it was an Episcopal service.
What?
A little one of these at the end, and I would feel like I was in an Episcopal service. What page is that?
The last two paragraphs?
Yeah.
164. The last two things he has to say to us.
Okay, are we all ready to pray? Jill, you want to do it?
Keeps us sober.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.